Welcome to Reclaiming the Republic. This show is sponsored by Mobius Strip Press. I am G.R. Mobley. If you go to my site, reclaimingtherepublic.org, you will have access to my content and support documents and links. This is an educational grassroots program leading in restoring the Republic and placing the federal government back into the scope and framework of the Constitution once again.
And welcome back. We are, well, we're supposed to be going into the resolutions. And we've got to get through those. We've got to get through the Department of Transportation vetoes. We've got a lot of content to go through, but apparently the news cycle, the news of the day, seems to be consuming people. As I was talking about yesterday, even though the bell has been rung on the election, at least the perceived bell has been rung, that is only because there's been a concentrated effort in America to move elections towards the communist control. And as a matter of fact, as they started injecting mail-in ballots and simplifying things, because you do realize that as we started moving away from actually locally controlled precinct elections, we have given up and surrendered the veracity of our elections as well as our election integrity. And so what we need to do is we need to unring this bell. Is that possible? Absolutely. All it takes is for states to audit and prove what level of voter fraud and election fraud has occurred. And as a matter of fact, the state legislators need to create and identify an independent auditing entity and agency and or actually people. And as a matter of fact, what they should do is they should probably turn to the sheriff, give the sheriff the necessary budget to actually go through and audit the every county election. Now, there's a good possibility that the, you know, sheriff in certain counties may be, well, to be honest with you, may be corrupt. I know that the Spokane County sheriff is corrupt. I wouldn't trust that person. There's other sheriffs, I'm sure, that wouldn't be, you know, let's use the big air quotes here, trustable or worthy of our trust. But what we have to do is we have to get the state legislators to actually create clarity as to who are eligible and legitimate registered voters and who are not, and then delineate or discern which votes were cast by ineligible voters and remove all votes that are not legitimate. In other words, votes were cast by ineligible voters, multiple votes by the same person, and or electronic shenanigans and so forth. This is how you unring the bell. Even if this continues and even if this doesn't go into the 12th Amendment, into the hands of Congress, because there's a lot of people talking that it may go into the hands of Congress and that Congress, based on the 12th Amendment, will actually ignore the Electoral College due to voter fraud and due to the allegations and the questions raised on the floor. You got to understand that on the 6th of January, this is when the entire Congress convenes together and they start unsealing these votes for who's supposed to be president. And I had just seen on social media that apparently Arizona, I forget what the other states were, but there were four of the battleground states that claimed that those voters had Georgia, Florida, and I forget, maybe Pennsylvania and Michigan. But anyway, four of the states claim, or somebody's claiming that four of the states' electors did not vote for Biden. They voted for Trump. And so doesn't matter how all of that goes down. The question is, will there be people on the floor of Congress or in the Senate, or actually the House or the Senate, that challenge the veracity of the Electoral College and the vote? And if so, then it goes to the floor of both houses. And I have not pulled up, and I had a question that came to me on Friday with the Montana legislators, and they asked about the 12th Amendment. I said, that's an amendment I haven't really gone through as far as reading the debates. I just got to the Annals of Congress, and now I am going to start downloading those, and I'm sure it's going to be several pages. It was 263 pages of to read through for the 14th Amendment. And if you understand the text and how much text is in each of those pages, I think you'll understand that that's a tall order to sit down and read all of that in just in an hour or two. So anyway, based on other people's analysis, not mine, but based on other people's analysis of supposedly going through the debates and how it is supposed to be done, the Senate actually gets, I believe, one vote each. And then in the House, they get delegates because each state's representatives creates a delegate, or I should say a delegation, and each of the states that are represented by control of party would dictate the outcome. So based on this analysis, there would be 30 votes in the House of Representatives for Trump and 20 votes for Biden. And in the Senate, it would basically come down to, if it was a tie, then Pence would throw his vote towards Trump. And so that would be 51 to 50 and 30 to 20. So basically both houses would then elect Donald J. Trump as the incumbent and the new president for the next term. So that's kind of how that would go down based on somebody else's analysis. Myself, I still don't trust it. Our biggest mistake is that, you know, once we can survive an election, everybody just casts things off. I can tell you, as I've talked to good conservative leaders over the past 4 years, every single one of them has complained because of the conservative effect. Oh, well, we have a conservative president in the White House. We don't have to worry. Money dries up. And people who do not understand that the president doesn't have the powers that they claim to be. Oh, and so there's another play. Some people are saying that, oh, well, Trump is going to invoke his own executive order that he signed in 2018. And I think I talked about this yesterday in a previous episode, that if Trump went down that path, if Trump actually pulled that shenanigan, I think you're going to find that this will go to court, and the Supreme Court will basically admonish him for trying to use his own authority to legislate where that power is not vested in the presidency. And that means that he would lose that battle, as he has lost many other battles, right sometimes and wrong sometimes, by the justices. Now, do not believe that we have a conservative Supreme Court. Do not believe we have a constitutional-leaning Supreme Court, because we don't. I think maybe Clarence Thomas might be a pretty strong, a strong base, or have a good, strong understanding of the Constitution. But none of those men and women have read the ratification debates. None of those persons on the Supreme Court understand how the Constitution was defined and the terms of the Constitution. And they have the paradigm that it is up to their interpretation and application of the law. And as long as they have that paradigm, America loses. And it's that simple, folks. This is why I can't assert enough that the courts are not the final judges. The final judges are the state legislators. Regardless of legal ease, regardless of how somebody in black and white makes an argument regarding something that is constitutional, And regardless of how smart that person is in case law and precedents and being able to weave an intricate argument, it doesn't matter. As Madison said in his resolutions, and this is why we're going to get into these, because this stuff is really, really powerful. So as Madison basically said in getting into his comments or his notes on the Virginia resolutions, and this is when he wrote this in 1800, that where the resort can be had to no tribunal superior to the authority of the parties, in other words, there is no court superior to the states, the parties themselves, the states, must be the rightful judges in the last resort, whether the bargain made, whether the compact, the constitution, the treaty that has been made has been pursued or violated. The Constitution of the United States was formed by the sanction of the states, given by each in its sovereign capacity. It adds to the stability and dignity, as well as to the authority of the Constitution, that it rests on this legitimate and solid foundation. The states then being the parties to the constitutional compact, and in their sovereign capacity, it always follows necessity that there can be no tribunal above their authority to decide in the last resort whether the compact made by them be violated. There you go. So when the Constitution is being violated, the final arbiters are the states. We're going into promo. We'll be right back after this. Thank you so much. Folks, as you know, online fraud is on the rise, and it's more important than ever for your new and existing customers to be able to determine whether they are using a website with a secured connection. If you didn't know, Google mandated in 2017 that all data submitted to its linked websites must be secure with SSL certificates. Without SSL certificates, your site is listed by Google as not secure. In other words, without these certificates, your site will be harder to find, and this will impact new traffic and ultimately your revenue. Whether you're a blogger or in e-commerce, AdLocal will help protect your website from all forms of data breaches, phishing scams, and build a secure environment for your businesses, big or small. Contact AdLocal by calling 866-88-ADLOCAL or visit them on the web at www.adlocal.com for custom pricing. If you've listened to my show, Reclaiming the Republic, then you should understand that the Constitution is neither a living document nor a noble guide to governance. In accordance to Article 7, the Constitution is a hard, fast contract, and the states are the only stakeholders in this contract. Integral in contract law, the stakeholders or states possess the inherent authority to exercise oversight and enforcement over their contract. This means they can audit the federal government by the contract, and with republic review, they can enforce compliance to their constitution. Any single state can perform the audit, but when states begin to unite in the auditing process, this is what is referred to as republic review. Please read my argument for republic review, as well as my description of the republic review model on reclaimingtherepublic.org. We even have a graphic flowchart that shows you how republic review works. If you want to learn more, contact me on Facebook or send me an email. Thank you. Okay, so the number to dial in is 215-TOP-TALK or 215-867-8255. Do not forget my three C's when you dial in, and let's get on with the dialogue.
Okay, so as you know, the news media has done everything they can to basically congratulate everybody salivating over this Biden election, or this Biden president-elect. And as you know, they're referring to Trump, and when they're using language like his lame duck measures and lame duck session, they're basically pointing to the fact that he is in a point of desperation, that his presidency has ended, and they're going to marginalize him as much as they possibly can because they have created a persona that he is the enemy.
Now, I believe that in some ways they're casting that because, and those are the things that they're highlighting. But you got to remember that Trump has failed to do a lot of the things he promised to do. And as a matter of fact, our problem is constitutional literacy. We do not have a presidential candidate that cares about the Constitution or even understands it. What they care about is running this federal apparatus that has aggrandized itself over the past 200 years in its roles, responsibilities, and powers in governing and dictating almost every facet of our lives. As we see, I mean, even the Trump administration initially supported the concept of lockdowns. Then he realized that it was going to destroy the economy, and he started basically pushing back. As we can see, that even during the Trump administration, there had been quantitative easing as well as other stimulus measures in trying to, and when you refer to stimulus measures economically, what that means is they're injecting fiat currency to inflate our currency. I just want you to know that we're not the only ones doing this. And as a matter of fact, just within the last few weeks, the ECU has approved and has begun injecting stimuluses into their economy, and they're moving ahead in pushing this global reset. If you understand, the EU, North America, most of the nations in North America, Australia, every Western nation has had to stimulate, or what we call inflate, their currency to make the perception that prices are stable, that the economy is stable. But what really happens is that they're devaluing the dollar without you really recognizing that, you know, things are going to become much more expensive. Every time they inject money into into circulation, it takes a while. The people that get the best value out of that money that's being injected are the banks, because the banks command the interest rates on what they're throwing out for small business loans and everything else. Small businesses who get these loans first are able to buy products and so forth at the old price. But as soon as the demand, you know, along with the inventory, you know, it's what is that old supply and demand. Once the supply starts to go down and the demand is still up, the prices go up. That's what's happening. And that's why when you see, you know, today in tech, if you bought tech this year, the prices of tech this year compared to last year kind of stayed the same, if not maybe a little more. I got better prices on some of the tech purchases I made last year in the fall timeframe than I did this year. Why is that? It's because supply is down. And as a matter of fact, let me ask you this. How's your Christmas list look? Anybody that's, you know, the slave to, you know, buying corporate American goods to put under Christmas trees and to, you know, throw cheer around. How's your Christmas list look? How is the inventory? Were you able to get everything on your list? As I've found, most people are having a hard time because there wasn't enough. The retailers shorted themselves because they were anticipating a kind of a flat year, if not a down year, because of the COVID lockdown and so forth. And what has actually happened is that they've basically exceeded expectations on how much people are buying, and that they don't have the inventory. And the good news is they're finally selling the crap that nobody would buy the previous years. And I know that because I have a very close friend who happens to run a small retail chain. And because they underordered, they're actually selling out stuff that they've had on the shelf for years and years just because people are coming in and they want to get something, and it's better to have something under the tree than nothing. And I'm going, wow. So in some ways, people are, and so here's the question, and actually here, I think here's the reality. These small companies that have these old items on the shelf, do they ratchet up their price? Because if they have to replace that product, they can't get it now at the same price. So how much do they adjust? Because they're carrying that product on the books for the probably its cost from 2, 3, 5 years ago. And the prices have gone up. And so when they actually sell that and they have to replace that inventory, they're going to realize that they didn't make enough money to actually replace it without having to significantly mark up. So these are just the few things that are going economically. And the push is to actually do a financial reset. If they do a financial reset, the one thing, the one little goose with the golden egg, the one golden egg out there that nobody talks about is your 401ks and your retirement plans. All of these federally controlled investments are out there, and they won't seize those, would they? They can, and they have in other countries. It's always been, and you need to Google, seizing 401ks and seizing federal government seizing 401ks and retirement plans. There's actually, and that plan actually came out during the Obama administration. It was submitted as a real idea to basically confiscate everybody's 401k and and use that as a federal wedge to be able to kind of prop up the economy and help, you know, leverage that as a debt. In other words, put that out there and let other, you know, other nations like China, you know, buy into taking that from you. I have heard that if we go through a reset, and this has been economists, and I forget the guy's name, was it Schiff? Nevertheless, economists have actually forecasted that if we do go through a global currency reset, whatever you have in savings in these 401ks and so forth, you will only receive a fraction of their value. In other words, pennies on the dollar. And so what we see in your bank accounts, your savings and so forth is, and this is one of the reasons why they've been arguing the importance in actually getting precious metals and so forth. If, and remember back in March, I told you to buy silver. Did you buy your silver at what, $11 an ounce, $12 an ounce when it was down there? Because right now it's double that. I believe silver currently is somewhere around $24. And, you know, as far as I know, there is, you know, no real sign of it dropping or plummeting because there just has not been that level of of stability where people have, you know, abandoned that market. So what are you going to do? How are we going to actually deal with the you know, the financial reset? Are you prepared to do that? Well, let me actually just go to Monex.com, because if you're going to buy, and I'm just saying this for, you know, not to make any money, if you're going to buy any precious metal, I would really recommend going to Monex. You have to pay a little bit more, but that's because they offer you the lowest price, but you're buying a larger quantity, like 100 coins of silver. But silver currently is $24.63. Now, when I told you to buy that, actually, if you look at, let me see, the silver prices And so if we go, and if you start looking at what it was, I think you're going to find that it was down at $11. And so pulling up the chart now, and in I think it was March or early April, right, here's the dip. And they're saying it was $15 for an American Eagle. That wasn't by the ounce of bullion. I think the ounce of bullion was probably 11. But the whole point is that if you've got money right now that has value to it, see, you've already lost half that, because if it's $15 and currently, I think they're saying, yes, the silver eagles, the American Eagles, are $29, not $25. $25 is the bulk bullion. Anyway, we'll be right back with more things and more info.
The reason progressives are effective in instituting their policies is because they are united ideologically, financially, and socially. In addition, almost every billionaire in the world is funding a vast array of different groups, and these groups' efforts are to undermine our republic and our constitution. If you don't believe me, just Google donors to the Open Society Foundations. The only way we're going to successfully combat these efforts and take back our liberties, like our education system, healthcare, state lands, housing, labor, and many other roles, responsibilities and powers that belong to the states, is by you and I and local businesses getting involved in supporting political programs and efforts based on constitutional principles. The best way to do this is supporting result-oriented organizations designed to take back our lost liberties. The ultimate result-oriented effort is Republic Review. So please consider contributing to the show and the organizations and activities that we are supporting by going to reclaimingtherepublic.org and go to the contribution page, and you can become a listed supporter of liberty. To become a citizen, one must take an oath to support and defend the Constitution. Those of us who are naturally born citizens are obligated and duty-bound to fulfill the same oath, even though we're not required to take it, because it is implied upon us at birth. This is why I cannot emphasize enough the importance in supporting businesses who are supporting our Constitution. We have to stop supporting businesses that have chosen to hide behind political correctness, and obviously we must stop supporting progressive businesses who are working to undermine our republic and our Constitution. Do not let businesses or organizations convince you that they are supporting the Constitution by supporting protests for social justice. By definition, social justice is the distribution of wealth, opportunities, and privileges within a society. In other words, they're calling for socialism, which is incompatible with individual liberty and individual sovereignty and our Constitution. With that, please consider supporting businesses who advertise on this show and this radio station.
That number to dial in is 215-TOP-TALK, 215-867-8255. And again, don't forget those three C's. And if you're ready to call in, the lines are open.
Okay, so one of the things I failed to do yesterday was to actually do my usual. This show is also sponsored by ReclaimingTheRepublic.org as well as RepublicReview.org. So I figured I'd better get that straight away in now, because I realized this would be day two. I forgot to do that. Anyway, as you know, this is really the only show that gets into the constitutional evidence of what we have to do. If you want to save the Constitution, this only the states can do it. If you want to get the federal government back into full compliance with the Constitution, only the states can do that. So, in laying all that out for you as clear as possible, we have to get the states. We need, and as I've been mentioning, we need 13 states. We need to get 13 states as fast as possible taking a stand against the federal government, not to secede, but to demand the federal government comply to the Constitution, and that the federal government has not been delegated the many authorities that it claims to have. And that it has aggrandized and basically made the stuff up as it's gone along to suit its controls, where the states were clearly not participants in creating an unlimited general government, which is what we have today. And so with that, I want to thank you for listening. Our numbers have popped up. We want to continue growing the message. Obviously, that's what that means. I want to thank you for helping get the message out. Continue getting other people to at least start listening to, especially the content. When we start diving into the content, which tomorrow we're getting into the resolutions, that'll probably take a good week. So we're going to probably just focus and hunker down on the resolutions and, you know, might rant about the upcoming election, but, you know, our current focus election-wise and so forth. But just to be clear, we need to get through these resolutions because this is what Thomas Jefferson and James Madison did when the federal government decided to breach the contract or the Constitution in violating the First Amendment and other laws and paradigms. So as we move forward, let me kind of get into what else we're going to do. What we also want to do after the resolutions is we want to get into the vetoes of the Department of Transportation. We want to kind of cover the Monroe Doctrine and the Missouri Compromise. Both of those were in the Monroe era. Then we want to cover the 14th Amendment. Actually, prior to the 14th Amendment, we'll kind of cover the 11th and 12th Amendment, then the 14th Amendment. And then we will call for and actually start pointing out some of the shenanigans that the federal government was actually committing, such as creating the Department of Home, playing in selling land, giving land away to Amtrak, and actually helping bolster and protecting stocks and getting involved in regulating railroad and so forth. You got to understand that every time the government has been asked to do something that they didn't have the power to do, they never pushed back and said, no, shoot, if you want us to. And a good example of that, because it was brought up to me by a friend, a good example of that is when the Mormons started moving west and started, you know, practicing polygamy and so forth. The evangelicals and many of the religious leaders and those who wanted to stop the Mormons' practice of polygamy, it was them going to the federal government that injected itself. And from that point on, the federal government has basically involved itself in marriage. And look today, because of the desires of the many to go after the Mormons for polygamy, the federal government now has dictated and mandated to every state that homosexual marriage is the law, and they're protected to be, you know, they have a right to be married and so forth. But they have no jurisdiction over that or even over polygamy. Those are state issues. But my point is that every time we knock on that door, you know, to think that they're going to help us with this problem that is just wrong, we've got to fix this and we'll get the federal government to do it. You have just surrendered to them unconstitutionally power that they shouldn't possess. And then they're thinking, well, okay, you gave it to us. It's got to be legitimate, and it's not. And that's how clear that is. Anyway, so that's kind of the lineup of stuff. When we hit the New Year's, we will go through setting effective goals. And whether you want to tune into that or not, I believe in trying to help people become successful. And I believe it's important that as people become successful, they help other people become successful. And so if you want to be more successful, if you're tired of, you know, having desires and goals unmet, then learning how to set effective goals would probably be something you'd be interested in. And so I'm just giving you this layout of what we're going to be talking about so that you can, hint, 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 let other good patriots and citizens know what and why they need to listen to this show so that we can start growing the reach and the information and teaching people that the federal government has no business doing over 95% of the stuff it does. Its debt is all based on fraud, so forth and so on. So let me just kind of dive into what some G. Edward Griffin's Need to Know News is for what we have for the remainder of the time. I'm not sure if you've ever heard of
Help America Vote Act of 2002, it created the United States Election Assistance Commission that led to, and that was under Bush, by the way, and that led to the replacement of punch card paper ballots as states outsourced election management to private companies like ES&S, Dominion, and Smartmatic. Today, these vote counting machine companies control more than 92% of U.S. elections, and you may want to know how much money that they're making because they're doing the job that used to be done for free by your precinct members when you went into their garage and cast your vote in early November. Anyway, in 2020, this is G. Edward Griffin again, in 2020, Dominion Voting Systems, which supplied the machines at the heart of the Biden vote-stealing scandal, bought Sequoia Voting Systems that contained Smartmatic software. In the 2020 election, Dominion was responsible for over 50% of all votes in 30 states and was dominant in every state where the outcome was contested by the Trump legal teams. Lord Mark Malik Brown, chairman of SGO Smartmatic, has been on the board of Davos World Economic Forum, the prime driver behind the dystopian Great Reset agenda of the UN Global 2030 program. He was a deputy secretary general of the UN and was vice president of the World Bank. Malik Brown is also a member of the highly secret Privy Council, an elite of some 500 plus people selected by the Queen of England to run affairs of the state. Last week, George Soros announced that Malik Brown will be Open Society's new president. You do understand George Soros and Open Society. This is the organization that is committed itself to moving what by crook or hook or by thief and scandal every country into their under their dominion. Two of four board members of Smartmatic USA were head of the U.S. government agency delegated to develop guidelines for voting systems, and two were Obama Democrat appointees. One is a Biden advisor. So, you see, there's these relationships that you just can't avoid. And when you really start peeling back the onion, you really start seeing how rotten things are at the core. That's really where we're at. And so with the next minute, let me try to cover what's gone on in Virginia just recently. The Campbell County Board of Supervisors declared themselves a First Amendment sanctuary by a unanimous vote on a couple Tuesdays ago, declaring that they will, actually, I think this was last week, not be enforcing Governor Northam's COVID-19 orders. The First Amendment sanctuary resolution calls Governor Northam executive orders unconstitutional and instructs the sheriff and county employees to refrain from enforcing the orders. A small town in Rhode Island, Burrville, declared itself a First Amendment sanctuary town back in June, proclaiming the Governor Gina Raimondo's executive orders for social distancing and limits on crowd size were unconstitutional and would not be enforced. So here is something that you can push for. I believe if you really want to be effective, what we want to do, and I've got to call Bob, I'd like to create a boilerplate petition that everybody can just basically duplicate. You're going to have to insert your own state constitutional laws and or, you know, codes or what have you, so that you can actually point to the law itself. But what we want to do is get people First Amendment petitions to take to their county commissioners to demand that they remove their governor for violating his oath of office, for violating the 14th Amendment and your Bill of Rights or your constitutional rights of assembly, worship, and so forth. So When we come back in our last segment, we'll cover some more need-to-know news, and we'll be right back after these two promos. Thank you so much.
If you run a business or an organization, you already know email is an essential tool for communicating. If you're interested in reducing your overhead and increasing your productivity, I personally recommend you look into AdLocal email marketing services. AdLocal has a special offer for my listeners with email services that start at $10 a month for your first 1,000 addresses. If you want to increase customer retention, grow your market presence, track your statistics, and improve your engagement with your customers with modern, elegant emails that express the personality of your business with emails that integrate with your website, you need to contact AdLocal, and they handle the rest. Take it from me. AdLocal offers the best solutions for all organization sizes, and they lead with their pricing and the 24-hour customer service. Folks, it's time to call AdLocal at 866-88-ADD-LOCAL or visit them on the web at www.adlocal.com.
To set the record straight, Republic Review is neither an Article 5 convention nor a convention of states. In accordance with Article 5 of the Constitution, this convention requires two-thirds of the states to apply to Congress to convene a convention with the intent to amend the Constitution. This convention is unable to solve our real problem, which is non-compliance to the Constitution, and would be dangerous to convene at this time. In contrast, Republic Review is the process of the states exerting its constitutional authority over the Constitution. An audit does not require an application to Congress. This authority is inherent to principal stakeholders of a contract. Why do we need Republic Review? Because this is the only way the states can deal with the federal encroachments into roles, responsibilities, and powers that belong to the states. To learn more about Republic Review, please go to reclaimingtherepublic.org to read my content and my model on the audit and Republic Review process.
Okay, if you want to join in on the dialogue, you need to call 215-TOP-TALK. That's 215-867-8255.
Okay, so getting back into some more need-to-know news. Here is a whistleblower regarding vaccinations. So Brandy Vaughn, J. Edward Griffin reports, Brandy Vaughn, a former Merck sales executive turned vaccine whistleblower, died earlier this week, and her body was discovered by her 9-year-old son. Isn't that special? The cause of death is unknown. She is the founder of the website LearnTheRisk.org that exposes the negative health effects of vaccines and other medical inventions. Last December, Brandy published a statement on Facebook. I've never had any thoughts of taking my own life, not once, ever. Even before I had my son, I have a huge mission in this life. Even when they make it very difficult and scary, I would never take my own life, period, close quote. She made a chilling video in 2015 detailing the numerous times her home was broken into that included personalized threats. She said that security experts told her that she was being watched and recorded in her own home. Interesting. If you understand what this woman did and what she was doing and the circumstances of her death, you can't look lightly, because basically the tactics of the left is to silence. Remember? Any means necessary. The ends justify the means. They will do anything necessary to obtain their end. They don't care about life. They don't care about you. What they care about is obtaining the control that they know, they believe this is absolutely necessary for them to be able to, well, help me out here, for them to be able to subjugate all of us, because that's what it's about. It's about control.
because they know better than you do. They know what's best and how they can make everything perfect. Even though every time they've done this, it has failed. It has been rejected. Anyway, in New York State, Democrat Linda Rosenthal, a New York State Assembly member for Manhattan's West Side, introduced a bill that states, quote, "If public health officials determine that residents of the state are not developing sufficient immunity from COVID-19, the department shall mandate vaccinations for all individuals or groups of individuals who, as shown by clinical data, are proven to be safe to receive such vaccine." The New York State Assemblyman, David DiPietro, a Republican, said that the phone was blowing up with calls from constituents strongly opposed to the making the vaccine mandatory. He said, quote, "Taking the vaccine should be your choice." He added, "I find it ironic that so much of these people who are pro-choice and say, my body, my choice, but when it comes to a vaccine, now it's my body, but it's not my choice. The hypocrisy just drips off the wall with some of these people." DiPietro is working on submitting his own bill to prohibit mandating the COVID-19. You know, there is a bill. It's called the Bill of Rights. Why are we even looking at legislation? This is why lawmakers just make everything worse, because they want to create a law for everything that's already covered and protected. Anyway, mandating the COVID-19 vaccine while allowing citizens to maintain their civil rights. Governor Andrew Cuomo stated that you cannot make someone take a vaccine, but the state can coerce an individual to be vaccinated as a, quote, condition, close quote, of other things such as receiving welfare or enrolling your child in school. You know, they will stop at nothing to inflict their will and their desires upon you. Now, here's a good one, because this kind of lines up with what happened to Brandy Vaughn, because in France last week, last Thursday, Jean-Bernard Fortillon, a retired university professor known for his strong opposition to COVID-19 vaccines, was taken from his rented cottage in the south of France by a team of gendarmes, police under military command, and forcibly placed in solitary confinement at the psychiatric hospital of Uzes. The systematic use of psychiatric hospitals in order to silence or punish political opponents became widespread under communism. But, you know, we're not living under communism today. Isn't that nice? Anyway, Fortillon's forced imprisonment comes weeks after he voluntarily surrendered his computers to gendarmes. Days later, Fortillon's bank accounts and credit cards were suddenly blocked by an authority whose identity was not revealed to him. His pensions were also blocked. One of his lawyers, Mark Fribourg, has since, and I'm really bad with names, so you know I'm just butchering these things, right? Has since gone, well, Mark, that's correct. I got Mark right. Has since gone on record saying that Fortillon is a conspiracy theorist. Now, this is his lawyer doing this. In other words, his lawyer has to have been threatened to say, if you don't go with our narrative, then you're going to be joining him in the cell next door. Anyway, Fortillon's accused the French Pasteur Institute, a private nonprofit foundation, of having fabricated the SARS-CoV-2 virus over several decades, as has been a part to its escape from the Wuhan P4 lab. Fortillon's exposed to the public that a patent for SARS-CoV-2 that was filed by the Pasteur Institute in 2011 was identical to a 2003 patent for SARS-CoV-1. The purpose was to extend the patent for commercial exploitation, as the 2003 patent was set to expire. Now, one of the things that I've kind of promised, and I don't have time, but I didn't promise on this particular show. When I started my broadcasting in 2016 during the campaign and after the election, I promised to go through the hundreds of promises that Trump promised as becoming president. And many of his promises were really outlandish, violations of the Constitution and so forth. I do understand that there's a lot of people that love him. I don't understand that, but I do understand that people do love him. He's a man. And he was elected president by fluke. Now, we have a president that has been elected by theft and by fraud. And there's no doubt we don't get and don't obtain over 100% of registered voter votes in states without fraud. And so there are plenty of states that must be examined. This is why we're going to rail on this as we move forward going into 2021. We hope that we can start creating a few of these petitions to, one, go after your governor, as well as going after your state legislators to demand that they actually do a full-fledged audit, not of just the vote count, but the voter registration, how many people registered as fraud, and how many of those votes were counted, and so forth. We need to expose this completely. Okay, so I've got one more, and then when we wrap up today, we will be going into the Virginia, and the actually starts off with the Kentucky resolution with Thomas Jefferson, then we will go into the Virginia resolution, and then we will go into the four sites, of course, with me editorializing. So just to tell you, if I don't have time when we wrap up. Now, here's the last comment I'm going to give you from G. Edward Griffin. And this is regarding the Department of Homeland Security. Remember, Trump was going to go after illegal immigration and so forth, and how he positioned himself against DACA at first. And then he loved DACA. Remember, this is still his Department of Homeland Security. The Department of Homeland Security announced this week that it will begin accepting applications for the Deferred Action for Childhood Arrivals program after a federal judge ordered the Trump administration to reinstate the program earlier this month. In other words, they're giving preferential treatment to people, and the federal government has no constitutional standing to give any preferential treatment. Despite Obama's creating it by fiat in direct violation of the Constitution's separation of powers, programs like DACA, which effectively granted amnesty to hundreds of thousands of illegal immigrants, which he can't do, which they can't do, they have laws on the books. The only way that they can actually create an amnesty program is to wipe away and amend the Constitution instead of having an immigration policy, that we have amnesty policies or adding amnesty policies to immigration policies. Either way, it is required that they have immigration laws and that the laws be followed. They can't make it up as they go along. Anyway, as these things are going forward, the red carpet is now out for illegal aliens, and the amassing on our southern border is beginning again. My friends, we're reclaiming the republic, and we need your help. God bless.
Reclaiming the Republic is more than an educational radio show. My intent is to also work with you and local leadership to promote matters of the Constitution and self-governance. This way we can all promote constitutional awareness within our communities and with our elected officials and public leaders. If you love liberty and sovereignty and recognize the federal tyranny that is threatening our lives, then we are asking for your help. And here are a few ways you can help. Spread the word about this radio show, Reclaiming the Republic. It is the only radio show in
in the world asserting a constitutional solution to federal overreach. Download and share our podcast and content. Read, like, follow, and share our Mobiusstrip Press and Reclaiming the Republic pages on Facebook. Follow us on Twitter at Mobiusstrip News. Get informed about local groups in the area and get involved. Most importantly, become a constitutional warrior with your local leaders and demand that they begin applying constitutional tests to what they are doing and who they are supporting. Thank you.